Welcome to another episode of Inspiring Women, the podcast that celebrates the stories of extraordinary women from all walks of life. I am your host, Betty Collins. Join us for an inspiring conversation that will leave you ready to take on the world. So today on Inspiring Women, we are honored to welcome Pat LaLama. And she's an Emmy Award-winning journalist, TV host, and investigative reporter whose career has been defined by fearless storytelling and a passion for uncovering the truth. With decades of experience in broadcast journalism, Pat has covered some of the most high-profile stories across the nation, earning the respect of her peers and audiences alike. But before she became a recognized face on national television, Pat was a small-town girl from, just like me, Westerville, Ohio. And she walked the same halls at Westerville South that I did, and even, but she was really known for her drive, her intellect, and her curiosity. It's always inspiring to see how somebody from familiar roots can reach and go into incredible heights, proving passion and perseverance truly knows no bounds, and that is Pat. In addition to her work in journalism, Pat is a dedicated advocate for empowering women, my favorite kind of women, especially in media and beyond. And today she's going to share insights from her journey, what it took to break into the industries, the lessons that she's learned along the way, and her advice for striving others to make their mark. We are only as good in our world when women support women and women help women come along and women make sure that we are not just on our own at the top, but we're bringing people there. And so I'm passionate about the empowerment of women and women who do that for other women. And that would be Pat. So Pat, welcome today to Inspiring Women with Betty Collins. We are thrilled that you are coming to us today. Even today, you are rocking it, you're moving, you're shaking, and you really accommodated to make sure you could be on this podcast today. So I totally appreciate it. So
no,
we're just going to have a great conversation for the listeners. I think you guys are really going to enjoy her. And I would really make sure you look her up and see what things she does. Pretty amazing stuff. So, but throughout your career as an investigative journalist, you know, I had interviewed and have a client who was with the BBC. So it's very, mm-hmm. I always love to hear the perspective from the journalist. You tackle complex and often emotionally charged stories. So what personal challenges, you know, have you faced and how did you rise above them to inspire others?
First of all, thank you so much for inviting me. And it's so wonderful that you talk about the empowerment of women, because back in 1977, when I got my first job in broadcasting at WNCI Radio in Columbus,
oh, wow.
Ohio,
okay. Yes.
With Bob Nunley as the disc jockey, may he rest in peace. I loved him. I remember saying to myself that I had two endeavors. One was to inform and educate the public, not mm-hmm. to try to influence their opinions like so many media do today. And I'm very unhappy about that.
Yeah.
Inform and educate with vetted facts and let the viewer decide. I'm not going to tell you which candidate meets your approval. I'm not going to tell you which policy issue or ballot issue is you. I want only to give you enough good information that you can make the choice for your life. I still have that written down. I wrote it in 1977 when I graduated from The Ohio State University.
Yes.
And I have tried so hard all these years to stay true to that. The mm-hmm. second thing is that I swore that I was going, because at the time, women were not as prominent in television. And,
yeah.
and when they were relegated to... don't be offended, what I called back then, and still do call them chick stories. The and I'll explain that in a minute. It's what I told my first boss when he hired me. But
yeah.
I said, I want to make this an open door for women. And,
yeah.
And because of that, I refused when I saw all my colleagues starting to get Botox and facelifts and pumping up their lips. And I thought, no, I'm going to prove that you can stay in the business without doing that.
Yes.
And I am now 70 years old. I have never had work done. And I don't
care. Good for you.
I don't care. I see my peers, God bless them. That's their choice. I don't care what they do for themselves. But it's almost like a personal challenge to me to see how far I can go based on my abilities. And yes, that is the greatest lesson. I think I'm pretty fearless. I have never been mainstream. I'm not a sheep. I do what I want to do. You have to be thick skinned. I mean, mm-hmm. I've had all kinds of, you know, I have been hired and fired over the last, 46 years? Because if you choose to be on camera, you are fodder for firing, because you may remind your next boss, you might remind him of his ex-wife, and he just, for that arbitrary reason, doesn't want you on his air. It's like that. And I was going to make my mark and be different. The flip side of that was what encouraged me was a dysfunctional upbringing. Mm-hmm. I was never beaten or abused, but there was a lot of emotional negligence there. I was one of those kids who was raising her parents, basically.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm sure you understand, you know, I was the boss and I took care of my brothers.
Yeah.
And again, I don't want to falsely portray my family. There was love. There was music. We were crazy Italians, but there wasn't the kind of nurturing that kids need. And because mm-hmm. of that, when I was young, I was very insecure about myself. I was bullied in grade school and high school mm-hmm. at Westerville. There was a certain group of, you know, popular chicks who were nasty. I got voted onto the homecoming court and they just went berserk. I mean, the rumors, and I got voted onto the homecoming court because I was nice to everybody. I wasn't in the popular clique. I was just really, I loved people. And that came from my need to, you know, I was looking for love. I am absolutely not ashamed to say this in any way. I needed acceptance. And I knew I was going to make a mark. And I was impassioned. And I always had, I turned into a pit bull. I had a lot to say. I had something to prove. And I was not going to be stopped. And this all came from insecurity. And I'm fine with that. I don't think bad things. And when I say bad, again, it's not like, I mean, I should be more careful about how, because people are going to go, oh, poor Pat, Amish grew up in this horrible family. No. It was just more like, I didn't get the proper nurturing that I needed. Because, you know, my parents were Italians who got married too young. They had their own issues. You know, there was, and so that's that. All I'm saying is that your demons can end up being your best friend if you know how to make it happen like that. Right. No. And I've always done. I mean, I remember when I got my first job in television, I went home and I said, oh my God, don't they know I'm ugly and incapable? Mm. Yeah. For some reason I kept going. So I was like, you know, fueled by that insecurity, yet at the same time knew I could make something good happen.
Yeah.
And so I went to, Channel 6 in Columbus, which was then WTVN TV. And I became the main anchor there. But let me tell you this little story and talking about empowering women. So my first job was at WNCI Radio, as I mentioned, right out. In fact, they hired me before I graduated from Ohio State as a Cub reporter. And the news director, I'm still friends with him today, Tom Rizzo.
Love it.
I had heard, can I go back a little? Because
absolutely.
I wish I had 6 hours because you can't shut me up. But
you're the guest. Do your thing.
I had to pay my own way through college, right?
Sure.
And took the bus down to the campus every day and did a full load, 8, 9, 10, 11 o'clock classes. Then took a bus to WNCI where I was a Cub reporter. Then took a bus to the wine cellar restaurant where I was a waitress, which paid all my bills.
The wine cellar. I can remember going there.
Yes, it was a great, fun place.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I could do that today, but young people today go, what? Because, you know, they, young kids are made of something sadly different. Not all. I've met some very, very strong and determined young women and men, but you did that. I did that. I knew I wanted this. And no one will succeed in anything if they don't have passion. If you don't love what you're doing, it doesn't matter. You'll be miserable. And it really, I knew I wanted to storytell. And I developed this great ability to talk and communicate with people.
Right.
I'm the kind of person who gets in an elevator and I've made three friends by the time I get to the first floor. I love to interact.
Right.
And I felt that I needed a voice. I had some really strong opinions. I grew up Catholic. I despised that the Catholic Church was telling my mother that she had to take birth control because we were poor when I was first growing up. We did better later. And we had too many kids in a house that, you know, and I remember the priest coming around saying, oh, you know, birth control is a sin. I'm like, what the hell? I would think any God would want to us to responsibly procreate, right?
Yeah.
And I went to my parents, and I hope I'm not offending any Catholics, but I'm a loudmouth and I'm opinionated and I'm a journalist. I'm just telling you, if you don't want to hear it.
We want to hear it. Go for it.
And so I thought, oh, I need to start writing this stuff down. And that's kind of how I got interested in journalism. I love to talk. I love to connect. I had a voice. I was forming some really strong opinions. Not that I would ever show an opinion in my journalism, but I knew that I would be the kind of person who would look for the truth of the matter.
Right.
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 And I have always lived with that. So anyway, when my boss at WNCI finally gave me the full-time job, I said, well, thanks, Tom. I have to say I have one demand. This was in like 1977.
Love
I'm
it.
Making demands. Right.
Let's do
and
it.
But that's the news directors who weren't intimidated by my strength and they were the ones who hired me. There were a lot of men in the business who thought, like, whoa, you know, I wasn't demure. Remember Christine Kraft? Remember she was the first anchor to get fired, and she said it. They told her she was not beautiful enough and not deferential enough to men. Right? I have never showed any kind of. I have always been just as I am now. Right?
Yeah.
And back in the day, only certain male bosses could take that. And I'm still friends with all of them, actually. But anyway, I said, Tom, thank you for hiring me. This is everything I've ever wanted. But I just have to tell you, I don't do chick stories. And he said, and he was an Italian guy like me, right? But, you know, he goes, what? I said, I don't do chick stories. And he said, what do you mean? I said, I'm not going to do any feature story on Jane Fonda's workout, which was hot at the time, right? I'm not going to do the latest in breastfeeding technology. Right. I'm not going to do, you know, any of the stuff that you see on TV today, that the morning, like the, you know, the Katie Couric's are talking about. And he said, well, okay, write up a proposal. And so I did. And at the time I was very interested in politics. And I told him why I really wanted to pursue politics. And he gave me the keys to the news car and said, all right, go find a story. So I drove down to the State House downtown in Columbus, started knocking on doors, introducing myself to legislators. John Kasich was one of the first persons I met. We became friends, actually.
Good.
And I learned to develop my own stories. Nobody ever assigned me. I always said, we should do this, we should do this, we should do this. And from there, it just took off. And I went from Columbus local news to Boston local news, Chicago local news, LA local news, but then moved up into the network arena with, you know, like I've been on a trillion shows and currently work for ABC News and the TV show 2020, which is a dream job.
Sure.
Dream job for me.
Well, what I hear from you is, you know, we talked about, you know, where the personal challenge, here's the emotions behind things. You're emotionally charged. You're a storyteller. And what women need to hear is, you know, a lot of times when they see someone confident or they see someone like, you know, who you are, what you're doing. But what you did was, and I loved how you said this, I got to use this somewhere. You took your demons and you took that and turned them into passion, right? That passion, that emotion.
Right.
And
I turned it into a positive driving force.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the enemy. The enemy is the term that I always use.
And too many people, and women especially, I deal with it on a daily basis because 50% of women in Brady Ware are 50% of our team are women. And it's a confidence issue constantly. And they're paralyzed by those demons or those emotions, and they don't use it to their advantage.
Right.
And I'm going to learn from this. And then when I learn from it and do it, I'm now going to tell other women. This is what you do with those passions. This is what you do with those things that maybe weren't fair et cetera, et cetera. Because, you know, the fact that you were able to, in the 70s, tell Tom, I'm not going to do and be this standard in the box person that you think I might be by, I'm going to talk about, you know, the greatest thing there is for women, whatever that is at the day, whether, like you said, Jane Fonda, nothing wrong with Jane Fonda, nothing wrong with her workout.
No, I don't disparage any of those topics I brought
right,
up.
Right.
I just was not going to be relegated to that as most women in journalism were at the time.
Right. Because they thought that'll get me in the door.
Right.
You started right from the beginning. So you took those, you know, that emotion. And then because you knew you wanted to be a storyteller and you're going to tell your story, not only your story, you're going to tell the story you wanted to tell. So
right.
that, you know, so women in the audience learn from that. Take the things that you think are holding you back. Take the things that you look at negatives and turn them into positives and set the stage.
The demons are the strongest tools in your favor if you know
yes.
how to manipulate the demons. And
right.
I had to do a lot of talking. I mean, listen, to this day, I have insecurities.
Yeah.
But they don't control me.
Right.
I control them. I control
yes.
them.
Yeah. Yep. But the driver, demons could be your drivers. That's a great line.
Absolutely.
It's probably been out there. I just haven't heard it, right? But you've told so many stories.
Go ahead. Let me just say this.
Yeah.
In 2016, my husband, a very prominent criminal defense attorney, love of my life, I didn't get married till well into my 40s because I didn't want to. But
yeah.
he was the only one who could change my mind. I raised his two boys, 4 and 6 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
And he took his own life in 2016. And I found him. And I knew it was happening. I knew it was coming. It was a long struggle. And it also drove me to do better.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't just the suicide. When you live with someone who has issues like that, a lot of your life is consumed by trying to help them and take care of them. And I kept doing it and kept doing it. But after his death, I took 6 weeks to clear my mind and try to get over it and went right back to work. And I felt like a better person, a stronger person, a person who was more empathetic, more sympathetic, and made me, I feel like I'm a better journalist now because of it. And that's one of the worst things that can happen to a person, a suicide. But I looked up at Tony and said, I'm using this to do better, and went to 2020 ABC News.
Love it. Well, that's an amazing story in itself. We could probably go through that whole thing, but you've told a lot of impactful stories that resonate with your audiences. You know, how do you decide which story to pursue and what makes it powerful? You know, what makes it inspirational?
Okay. There's a good answer to that in terms of, I am now mostly focused on criminal justice. And there is no greater arena for where the human condition is presented on a silver platter than in a courtroom. When you look at people and go, how did your life get you to this?
Right.
Right now, as we speak, I'm covering a very sensational murder trial of a man named Fabio Cementilli. He and his family were from Toronto. He got a big promotion at Procter & Gamble, the Wella hair care line.
Right.
And he moved his wife and two daughters here to Los Angeles, where, you know, he was able to continue pursuing his career.
Yeah.
The wife ends up having an affair with a racquetball coach. And allegedly, because the trial is still going on, had the racquetball coach, who's a convicted sex offender, kill her husband. So that's the trial I'm on now. Now, you might say, salacious, TV's always picking the salacious. Yes, we do pick cases that have sometimes salaciousness, grit, you know, shock value. That's true. But the way that I justify it is I've spent the last 25 years really teaching people about how the criminal justice process works. I have this unique ability to, I'm not a lawyer. I'm too ADD to have gotten through law school, but I've developed my niche, which has allowed me to make it. There are very few people who do what I do, and that is know how to sit through a trial and listen to all the legalese and bring it to the audience in the fairest, most balanced fashion, but inject some color and my storytelling ability, but to show people how the system works and how oftentimes it doesn't work, right? I covered OJ. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, and yes, there's a lot of drama and provocativeness in covering murders, but I love our criminal justice system. I know it has flaws, but I think it's the best there is. And a lot of people don't understand it. And I think every day when I tell a story about a crime, I explain how this works and why that was allowed to be told and why that was excluded and what the defense attorney meant by this. But more importantly, I think that when I do my pieces on criminal justice, I offer, and because I've been around so long, I can wear the opinion hat sometimes, but only because I've been around for 47 years. And it's only after the trial is over. Right.
Yeah.
Because I can't be opinionated before that. But this is what I love the most. The room is Shakespearean. Every murder case, you can pull from the flaws of humanity. What, again, why did Monica Cementilli get so crazed over this racquetball guy who's a criminal and leave her? And here's what I want to know. Something must have happened in her childhood, right? That allowed her to mastermind her husband being slashed to death in his favorite chair on the patio in their beautiful home in Woodland Hills, California. What made her design it, allegedly, so that her 16-year-old daughter would be the one to come home and find him? What happened to that person? So I don't just cover the law and how I want to delve into human nature. I have sat on death row with people, just relentlessly intrigued by the stories that a lot of these people have to tell. I'm not saying it's forgives that, you know, that, you should get out of prison. Yeah. But I think we need to look at, here's another example. Okay, guy's a serial killer. Rather than just doing the salacious job of telling how he killed 15 people, let's go back to his life, his childhood. Where did things go wrong? Who didn't get him the help he needed? When he started failing in school, or you find out he had been, molested by his dad, or there's always a case. There's always a story.
Right.
And if we could start identifying those things before people get in trouble, then we would have a safer and better society, wouldn't we?
Right.
And a happier society. We tend to do everything Band-Aid, let people get messed up, commit crimes, ruin their lives, become addicts. And then we go, let's put money in this program. No, we need to be identifying the stuff early on. So I always try to inject that kind of understanding of the human condition.
Well, I say that, people are very critical or not about homelessness, right?
Uh-huh.
I kind of think the same way you do. I go, how does one get there? Like, how do they get there? And a lot of times, probably if they had any kind of data or they really wanted to jump in, they'd be going, is there mental health or not? Is there drugs or not?
Absolutely. And so most of it is drugs and mental health.
Right. And so if we dealt with those things, that's what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Interesting. And people love right now or hate the whole judicial system because they're like, what's happening to our institutions? And it scares you, right? So I love your approach, though, is to the, I hear you saying, I look for the why as well, not just cover the facts. I mean, you cover the facts, obviously.
But there's more to the story.
Right.
I mean, and look, just speaking of homeless, which we have a critical crisis here. I live in West Hollywood, there are many I say hi to, but
yeah.
I have no scourge feeling for those people. However, I have a lot of scourge for how government operates. They assigned $23 billion to the homeless crisis in California. Nobody knows where the money went. There's no accountability. And the homeless problem has increased. That's just BS. I'm sorry.
Right.
I am a big person for government accountability, which is why I will proudly say, I don't mind DOGE. Do it. I'm sick of the whiners. There is so much fraud. There is so much fraud. And if somebody doesn't want to write five things they did last week, then if I were the boss, I'd fire them. You can't think of five things you did last week. See, I don't want you on my team. So I am, and I'm sure a lot of people will hear this and go, oh my God, because there's so much pearl, clutching over this. But that's who I am. And if you don't like it, too bad.
Well, 50% of the people will love it. 50% will,
just keep going up, right? But I'm in that 50% why I want to sit down with those other 50 and go, why don't you want to, what would you run your house like this? Your husband's got the checkbook and you've got no money and you can't, you're like, where is it going? But you're not allowed to ask. That's baloney. Well,
I think people would love to hear the stories on, you know, it, because we've created the whole mess. We've created the whole environment. So let's get to why did we create this and can we uncreate it? Because we can.
Well, we can uncreate it. But we can uncreate it by stopping everything and looking at where the fraud is, where the mismanagement is. That,
correct.
Look, if I ran a business and I was constantly in debt and my employees weren't telling me what they were doing and they're at home on Zoom with their friends, drawing a full paycheck and benefits and sometimes moonlighting and getting a double salary. No, I'm going to find that out. You cannot tell me that that's okay. Yeah. Anyway, that's a whole different.
That's okay. And this is why we have the passionate Pat today.
Yeah.
Because uh-huh. She's got passion behind her stories.
I do.
But yeah. And I love talking to my client who's a journalist. I love talking with her because she does international. So it's intriguing to hear her mm-hmm. perspective. But for young women today, you know, who are aspiring or even people who young uh-huh. can be 40 in my mind, you know, it depends on what you want to do.
But 70 is the new 50.
There you go. But, you know, they want to have for young women or people who are in, you know, trying to get maybe where you have in your mm-hmm. investigative journey and storytelling, you know, what advice would you offer them, you know, so they can find their voice and their purpose? Because obviously you found your voice in, I'm going to really get into the criminal justice system. I'm going to specialize mm-hmm. in that. I'm going to focus on it because I'm passionate about it.
Right.
What's your advice to them today on where journalism is and how do they get there and how do I make, you know, where's my voice? How do I get my purpose? What's your advice?
Well, I'm an old school traditional journalist.
Okay.
So with all due respect, bloggers and podcasters, unless they are, if you're talking about journalism and I love podcasts, so don't get me wrong, but I always tell people to ask yourself what exactly you want to be. And if you say journalist, then it's got to be that you only go by facts. You double check, you source everything, you abide by all the rules of journalism. If you want to be more opinionated, then, you know, go that route. First of all, figure out exactly what's important to you, right? That's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And at the time, can I tell you just a quick story before I go on?
You can. Please do.
So when I was at the anchor at Channel 6, George H.W. Bush was campaigning to be the president of the United States. And it came through Columbus and every... they picked one person from each station to do a one-on-one interview with him. And I got picked because I was interested in politics.
Okay.
And I went down to these are the stories that help drive you through your career. So what's that beautiful old hotel in downtown Columbus? I don't know if it's still there, but it was very stately old brick building. Can't think of it. So I go up to the top floor with my cameraman and we're waiting for Mr. Bush to come in. And he comes in and I sit down, I do the interview with him. And he stood up and he shook my hand. And he said, "Miss LaLama, you ask very compelling questions." And for a budding journalist,
yeah.
Oh my God. It was like, whoa. The next day I had an interview with Barbara Bush.
Ah, she interesting.
She walked in, same place. And her press secretary introduced me and she was very sassy, right? She put her hands on her hips. She goes, "Pat LaLama." I said, "Yes." And she goes, "You're that little girl George is so in love with." And we had to come out from the fundraiser last night to watch you on the 11 o'clock news because he thought you were a good journalist.
Love it.
Isn't that sweet? I love it. I love it. But anyway,
the point of
this is that when I first began, I told you I had started to form instinct like the Catholic Church, that whole patriarchy. Became a thorn in my side. And I started writing articles mm-hmm. in college that got published about how I felt. But then I realized that, okay, I have a voice. I don't want to be an opinion person right now. So I took the things I was interested in. One of them is rock and roll. I covered a lot of rock and roll journalism, like I covered Grammys and interviewed lots of rock stars. That's another area of interest. I picked the things that make me either get mad or get really happy. Like the things that drive you, that's the direction you need to start going in because you will just want to spill out and you want to create ways to express yourself. So I chose journalism and I chose subject matters that I was interested in. And then I just started knocking on doors. I was not going to be stopped. Any city, this is when I was still in college, any city that I happened to be visiting on a vacation, I would call up the news director and go, I'm a budding journalist. Can I just come in and see your station? You'd be surprised at how many people were like, yeah, come on in. I did that in Chicago. I did it in San Francisco. I just started knocking on doors. And then I found out that WNCI was looking for a reporter. And I made spliced a little tape together because I had been on WOSU as the campus reporter, the radio station. And I took it into this Tom Rizzo. And I just looked at him and you have to cover up the insecurity and grow some, you know what, that are usually assigned to guys. But there's a figurative way that women can have them too. And I was not going to let anybody tell me that I wasn't going to do this. And I told him why he needed me. You don't go in demure. You go in and go, you know, look, here's how I think I'm an asset to your station. And I told Tom Rizzo this. This is what I think I can do for you. And when people are drawn to that kind of confidence, they're drawn to that.
They love it.
If you have a business, if you have that in your office interviewing with you or someone going, well, I really haven't thought about where I'm going.
Right.
Which one are you going to pick?
Right.
It's that simple. And you can't look. I have a very close friend who never made it in the business he wanted to make it in. He wanted to be a musician, and he's a great musician. And I had a lot of contacts, and I would hook him up
together,
but he couldn't. He couldn't. I got him in a room with a few people, but with a guy who has discovered so many famous people, and I said, "Go for it." And he couldn't bring himself to go talk to him. You've got to cut that out right now. Cut it out right now, young women. You can't. No. Even if you stumble and trip over yourselves, get over that person and say, hey, I'm really interested in this business. I'd like to say hi.
Right. And you look at the world today. I mean, you look at the generations, even two behind us, maybe three behind us, and they might have an idea and they might have passion, but they don't have an ability for pursuit. Did I say it right?
Beautifully
pursuit,
said. Beautifully
pursuit
said.
Is it. Right. I mean, that is the thing of nobody will see your value like you do, first of all. Yeah. So you're only as valuable to others. I mean, you're not going to hire someone who loves, I don't know, or not really. I mean, they want that confidence.
I mean, you could say you haven't decided something, but you can say it in a strong way.
Right.
You can say, well, you know, I really like this. I really like that. And I'm kind of waiting to see where my life experience. I mean, you can exude doubt about yourself, but it's the way that you present it. And one of the things I see with young women is they don't use their voices. I don't know what this thing is I see in young women today. It's called vocal fry. Do you know what that is?
I do.
When these young girls talk like that. Yeah. They talk like that. I'm like, stop it. Stop it.
Right.
You know, use your voice. Be, you know, don't be who you aren't. Don't be somebody you're not, but use your voice. I don't know how this vocal fry thing start in the up talk. And then I took a walk and then we went down the street. I'm like, no, stop it. Speak. You know?
I love it.
And
but
the
I mean,
vocal
I mean,
fry, it's a bad look. It's a bad sound. It's horrible.
So what I'm hearing you though is you were in control of the pursuit. I mean, everyone has passion. Everyone has ideas. Everyone has kind of, for the most part, I want to do and be this. But if you don't own the pursuit, forget it. No, it doesn't matter if it's journalism's right. Journalism, whatever. And it doesn't matter. Right.
Yep.
But you know, I have a person I love to watch now. And I'm not a big Facebooker. I have about 200 friends because I don't want to know everybody. I don't accept all this crap. But there's a girl on there. She's probably 30. She's a woman. She's not really a kid, but she has 5 kids. And she caught my attention because the first time I saw a reel, she goes, this is, you know, I'm a poor mom to middle class and I'm, you know, and here's my story. And her whole passion isn't, I want to be a CPA and a shareholder, or I want to be on 2020, you know, when I'm this, her whole passion was, I raised my siblings and I want to be the mom who raises her children, not, you know, and she followed kind of in her mom's pursuit thing where she got pregnant young. Right. And she's like, here I am. But she had an ability to control the pursuit of which way she wanted to do when that pregnancy happened, right? And now she has, when she hit 400,000 people on Facebook that follow her, and that's not Instagram and that's not TikTok. And you know what she does? Here's what we're making for a family of seven and a middle-class poor family. She come in, she does tater
Love
tots
it.
And right. But now she has
400,000.
Because
she's relatable. She's
right.
Relatable.
Relatable. She controlled the pursuit of what she was going to do. And on top of that, she's now selling the tater tot brand because people are going, hey, would you
That's
advertise?
So fabulous.
It's an amazing. I love watching her because she controls
she's a
her
reality
pursuit.
show. Has anybody approached her about doing a reality show?
I don't know.
What's
Her
her
name
name?
is Jessie Ray, and she's probably
Jessie
30-ish.
Ray.
Jessie Ray, and it's RAE. I would love to be able to get her on this show because she isn't looking at what we think of. Only people with passionate ideas are career people or they're doing,
Oh,
you know, their person.
exactly.
She's passionate about raising her own kids and having dinner every night at the table.
God
And
bless
then,
her.
right.
Yeah.
I mean, she takes even a, this is how a family of seven, a poor family. Now she kind of calls herself middle class. And the first time she bought a car, she says, I was able to get a car. Can you believe this? Her husband, they shared one, a family of seven,
I
had one
love this
van.
story.
It
I
is.
love this.
She has
What's her
inspired
first
me.
name?
Jessie,
Jesse. Okay.
Jess. I'll try to get you something through Betty, but she inspires me because she controls that pursuit. I'm going to pursue this. And it isn't some big thing of I'm going in politics. I'm going to be a CPA. I'm going to get a master's. Well, is what we think that's what pursuit is? No, pursuit is I have this thing and I'm going to do it. And then I'm going to
But
pursue
can
it no
I tell
matter
you
what.
something? I'm
Yeah.
sorry for interrupting.
No, good.
But I'm so glad you brought her up because if you want to know the truth, I relate more to her than I do my peers in the journalism industry. You know, it's funny because I'm a blue collar girl.
Yep.
My parents were from Italian immigrants and we had nothing. I saw my dad like in tears one day because he couldn't give us enough breakfast food. Right. I mean, I was always embarrassed because we lived in a neighborhood that had no sidewalks. It was lower middle class neighborhood when I grew up at Morrison, Cleveland.
Yeah.
And when we moved to Minerva Park, things got better. But I mean, most of those growing years, and that's what got me mad at the priest who would come around and talk about birth control, because all my neighbors were poor people with tons of kids
Two
and
kids.
struggling to make it. Right. So to this day, I really love the company. I have all kinds of friends. I'm very lucky to have so many friends from all walks of life. But I
Yeah.
love the company of the people who grew up like I did, struggling.
Right.
I have more in common with these people, and I love them. And I'm
Right.
most of the time I will hang around with the cameraman and the producer, then I will
Right.
like another on camera, which nothing wrong with them. I have those friends
No.
too, but I really, my roots are everything.
Yeah.
And feel a kindred spirit with people who struggled.
Right.
And I mean,
Or
I
learn from the roots, learn from the background, you know,
that's
and
what I'm saying.
that's what with her, she was like, I'm going to learn, even though, ooh, I'm now pregnant, but I mean, and I've got a kid and I'm young and I'm still raising my siblings. She took that somehow and has turned it around in a way that inspires me.
Love it.
I love listening to her over, you know, the bigger podcast people or the people who are, you know, oh, I'm this and that. I don't really care. She's nothing like that yet. She inspires me to be more. She inspires
Right.
me to do more, and I love it.
Right.
But
it's
so,
all about the pursuit, which is what we were talking about.
Yeah.
And that's one of the most important things. Yes. Okay. So now you've got your passion and now you've kind of got an idea of where you want. That's what people mostly, young people. I just gave a speech at a university the other night about this. And that is, you're going to 48 out of the 50 aren't going to return your call or your email. Prepare yourself for that. Like it bounces off my back now. If somebody is like, no, thank you, I'm not interested. But you have to get used to that. And it only inspired me more. Like when I was at TVN, I wanted to jump over to Channel 10 because they had better ratings. And I met with, I think his name was Tom Mizell. Why I remember that name, I don't know. But and he didn't hire me, right? He didn't hire me. And I thought, I'll show him. And sure enough, I went off to Boston. And so I always to tell your women,
yeah,
take on the I'll show them attitude. Like, think of every guy who broke your heart, or every person who didn't think you were hot enough, or you didn't think you were qualified, or didn't think, you know, you were pop, you know, you didn't belong in the popular girls group at school. Right. Just say, I'll show them. And you know what my biggest I'll show them was to the girls who bullied me at Westerville? I got invited back to give a commencement speech once I had made it at Channel 6 and became the anchor. That was, I'll show them, right?
Yep.
And
right.
There's nothing wrong with that attitude. Nothing wrong
right.
with
it. And you weren't nasty about it, and you didn't throw it in their face. You just smiled.
I've never
all
said
the...
anything nasty to anybody, but Oprah is the one who said that success is the best revenge.
Yeah, it is. And you were laughing all the way to the bank. Okay.
Well,
you
now,
know?
Yeah. Back in the day, things have changed. The networks have gotten very greedy.
I hear. But she inspired. I mean, I look at her, but, you know, this year's podcast theme is about women taking flight and leading the way. And in my mind, she's in that back. She's in that
yes.
bracket. It's not that she's 400,000. Yeah, she's incredible. She just did a cooking show, actually. I don't know what TV it was. It was somewhere in Nashville. And she had the whole thing of, you know, they're doing her makeup and she's making her faces and she's doing her stuff, you know. But here she is and she goes, that was just like crazy. She doesn't take it arrogantly. She's not like, where's my people and somebody, you know. She just has that wholesomeness, and yet she doesn't live in, if you saw the house, even she does, you know, where she goes, you know, we're middle class when we're playing with the blinds that have been here the entire house, you know, it's, she just, it's just awesome. But when
I love that. And the best compliment that I get from people besides telling me that they appreciate my storytelling is you have never lost your Midwestern roots.
Yep.
I am so proud to be from Westerville, Columbus. I'm so proud of what the opportunities I had there and that I was able to take nothing and turn it into something.
Yep.
And I'm always boasting about Ohio people.
Right. And people, they'll say, are you a farmer? No. Are you out of your mind?
So,
come to Ohio. Stop talking about that.
Well, you know what? And there's no worse offender like that than people in California who have no idea that, I don't know if it holds true still, but Ohio had the most number of big cities in a single state of any other.
Yeah.
Like you look at Youngstown.
And I think Columbus. Yeah. I think Ohio, Columbus is like top 8 or top 10 for sure in size. I mean, so it's anyways, we got to keep going. Women taking flight and leading the way. We just talked about Jessie Ray. We see that in her. We see that in others. People see that in you. But what does that mean to you? You know, what does that mean? Women taking flight or women leading the way? What's your first thoughts when I say that?
Taking flight and leading the way is something I think I've done.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done it by encouraging all young women, all women. I'll give you an example. In Boston, I was at WBZ, one of the greatest stations. Back in the day, was considered one of the premier stations for journalism. And I was good enough to get there right out of Columbus, and I was really thrilled. And about a year and a half later, they decided that I wasn't a good fit for their TV station, which just happens all the time. And I probably wasn't. You know, it worked out fine. But if Boston and I were just not meant to be lovers.
It's an East Coast. It's an East Coast air out there.
Well, yeah, but I've worked in, there were many New York places that wanted to hire me. But it's just, I don't know. There was a woman they had already wanted from across the street at WCVB, and she wasn't available at the time, but she suddenly became available. And I think it just it worked. So they didn't fire me. They just didn't renew my contract when she walked in the door, but she came before I left, and I offered her my phone, my desk. I said, no hard feelings. Best of luck to you. I'm moving on. I moved on to Chicago, and I wanted to show her that I supported her and didn't take any of it personally to her. These are the things you can do to take flight is you take all the beautiful things that you've been able to acquire and you pass them on as often as you can. And I try to on my way up and still going up because 2020 is relatively new for me. It's been the last 5 years. And that's about as high as you can get in the TV news business.
Yeah.
And I am still saying, okay, what am I learning and what am I going to impart to to the younger women coming up. And I want to keep growing and learning. And honest to God, all those tragedies that happened, difficult things, helped me grow and learn. And that to me, and to continue to be happy with what you're doing. If you're waking up in the morning and you feel like I'm not really contributing much, change it. That's how you take flight. Change it. It is never, ever too late to change it. Never too late. Right. I mean, you can switch careers, or you can say, hey, I've raised my children and now I kind of want to pursue something. Don't let anything get in your way.
Right.
You know, your success is how you are going to define it.
Right. And sometimes success, we think, well, if I'm just resilient, I'll push through. I say to you, if you want to be resilient, sometimes you just say, here's my phone, here's my desk, best of luck, I'm moving on. Mm-hmm. Or whatever it is. You just go, no, it's time to stop. It's time to leverage. It's time to go to Chicago. It's time to do something different and be okay in that, not wallow around in it. You know,
yeah, that's exactly right. And another thing, I think this is important. You're making me think. You're very good at this.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. No, really good. You're really good at this. Is my stepsons once said to me, because I've lived in so many cities in the TV business.
Yeah.
Boston, Chicago, LA, San Francisco. And they said, how could you move that many times? I said, I loved it. I love change. I'm not saying other people have to move five times to five different cities, but I tried to teach them, please don't be afraid to have an adventure.
Right.
A lot of people paint themselves in like, well, I know that's out of my comfort zone. Stop that.
Yeah.
Stop. Yeah. I have landed in more cities knowing no one and seeing how far I'm going to go. Who am I going to meet now? What's this new job in this new town going to be like where I don't know anybody?
Yeah.
I love that. I'm not saying everybody has to do it to that extreme. It could be right in your own hometown. But if there's something across the street that looks like it's really going to make you a happier, better person, then by gosh, get over there and pursue
and do it.
Get into your uncomfort zone.
Yes.
That's where I love to be, where I'm uncomfortable.
I love that. I mean, for me, I can tell you, my first podcast is Your Nevers Are Your Opportunities, because I was never going to use my accounting degree. I was never going to be a CPA. I was never going to own a business. I wanted my paycheck. I didn't want to have to sign one, right? And make sure it was met every 2 weeks. And then I was never going to go to a bigger company. And I did all four. So when you know, have you ever had, and we'll end with this, when people and women in general, they'll go, I'm never going to do that. Did you ever find yourself saying that a lot, or you were not that person? I was that person. I'm never going to do this. You know, I'm never going to do these things. And then those things became the opportunity. I'm never going to move. I'm not going to go to comfort zones or uncomfort zones. Or
I never set perimeters. I just let, that's the other thing. I'm a free spirit, which is why, much as I love children, I chose not to have them. And while I loved my husband, I really, if I hadn't met him, I probably never would have got married.
Yeah.
I love making my own decisions. I love waking up and seeing what's going to happen today. So what opportunities will present themselves. So And I think that's important too.
Well, I could talk to you for hours, but I know you are in the middle of investigating journals, telling stories in a big court case, and it's 4 o'clock. So we've got to get you out of here. But I so appreciate you've been so inspiring today to talk to.
Thank you.
Do the pursuit of Jessie Ray. She's an amazing story. Really, really is. And I just am honored that you would be here today with us. I know my audience is going to just love it, and they're going to go, there's something in there for me. I can do it. But
absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Can I add just one thing?
You can. You're the closer. So close it up. Let's do
it. This is the most important thing that anybody in my life ever said to me. And it was my father.
Okay.
My father, and this was the year 1970, and I was 16 years old, and I'm in a traditional Italian Catholic family with three brothers, a dad who unfortunately didn't get to finish his education because back in the day, immigrants made their kids quit school and help support the family.
Sure.
And yet my dad did end up doing well for himself as a blue collar, as a concrete, he owned his own company, did very well. But, what's really surprising to me is that in 1970, he took me aside His name is Nunzio, by the way, but everybody called him Danny. And he didn't take my three brothers aside. He took me aside because he told somebody mm-hmm. later, he said, I saw something in my daughter. And he goes, I'm going to tell you two things. Now, keep in mind, Italian family, 1970, okay?
Yep.
He said, two things. Number one, pick a career that comes from your heart and soul. When you wake up in the morning and you go to the mirror and you look in the mirror, you have to say, I love what I've chosen to do. The money is not important, not at all important. It's fulfillment. This is my dad, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And number two, let me remind you, 1970.
Yes.
Number two, never, ever, ever count on a man to pay your bills. How about that?
Yep.
1970.
Go ahead.
He bulldozed the path for me right there. And that's exactly what I did.
My mother sat me down at 14 and said, and she was very conservative, still is, had a business in her home. She babysat kids, raised six children. But she said to me, you're never going to do what I do. You will go to college. You will pursue things. And by the way, you got to pay for it. So you're 14. Here's your work permit. Get going. Best advice ever, where I told my kids, you know, the college funds are there. You're going to go do it. And they didn't have the same work ethic as I did. I didn't give them the opportunity to, Well, we will end today, Pat.
Well, I just, but
thank
I just have
so
to
much.
Add that right after my dad told me that,
yes.
I told him I'm going to go to college and pursue journalism. And he said, great. I hope you find a way to pay for it. So it was like,
yes, we came from the same neighborhood, the same
right.
kind of thing. Right.
But you know what that means? I can survive anything.
Yeah.
Throw it at me. I don't care. Even tragedies, I can survive anything.
Yeah. So the recap is, you don't have to go in journalism to use these things. Your demons can be your drivers.
Absolutely.
Right? Your passion has to be there, but it's your pursuit.
That's right.
And listen to your parents. How's that?
And be fearless. You got to be fearless.
Yes. It's all good.
Be uncomfortable. You know what? All women should get on a train or a plane or even a bus, go to a city by themselves, say, I'm going to spend 4 days just exploring on my own. I'm not going to call anybody. I'm going to see what I learn and who I meet and what happens. That's a great thing for all women to do. A lot of women are afraid to do that. I have girlfriends who can't go out to dinner by themselves. I can't even imagine that. But you know what I'm saying.
I do. Ladies and gentlemen, Pat LaLama, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for letting me blab for so long.
Oh, no problem at all. We just are glad you tuned in today. Spread the word. Tell people about her story. It's a wonderful one. And check out her out on 2020 for sure.
Thank you
for joining us today. Yes, we appreciate
it. You are a great interviewer. I'm not just saying that. I've really enjoyed this.
Thank you for joining us on Inspiring Women with Betty Collins. We hope today's episode has inspired you to chase your dreams and break through your barriers and embrace your own unique journey.